You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Out of the swamps, what you think I've seen? Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of me, and we're talking moccasin and Joe. Well, the party gonna hell. Out in the St. John's Swamps. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Marco Bill. And Tom will be with us a little bit later on in the show. They're on expedition. We'll be doing a live report from the field, from where they're at. And we'll get to find out what's going on down there, where they're at. I'd like to welcome each and every one of you to the show tonight. I'd like to especially welcome our guests who took the time to come on the show to tell us about their encounter experiences. I also would like to thank all of our listeners out there for the emails and also the Facebook comments and other things that you send to me all the time. They're appreciated. Some of you give me some corrective things that you don't like we're doing, and that's fine. We love that. But a lot of you also give us some kudos, and we like that too. So everything is going well, it seems. I'd like to reach out there and wish one of our family a very happy birthday tomorrow. Snake Man is... his birthday is tomorrow. He's going to be celebrating his birthday, and we wish him a very happy birthday. All of you out there that do have birthdays that I don't know about, We wish you a happy birthday, too. And, of course, we'd like to also just send out a little prayer or well wishes for all of our friends out there who are sick and in need of medical attention and other things that that happen to us in life. And we just hope that you get better and that things are going well for you. Tonight, we have a pretty good show here. We're missing one person, but that's okay. He didn't show up on the air yet, but maybe he will later. I'm not sure. But it's going to be a full ticket anyway. So we're going to get started. We're going to go out here to hold on. I gotta do my little thing here with my control panel. We're going to go out here to Alabama, and we're going to talk to our friend Jesse. Jesse, how are you tonight?
Man, how are you? I want to thank you for letting me come on your show and tell my experiences of what happened to me over the years.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, Jesse. Tell you what, let's go back to some of your first experiences and just kind of work your way up to the present day. How's that?
That's fine. I'll give you my first one.
Sure.
I was about 12. A cousin, and he was walking through a neighbor's old grown-up field, and it's got what we call sage straw grew up in it. And when we was walking through there, something like a horse I heard jump up off the ground, and my cousin stuck his arm in my back and hollered, "Run, run, run, run." So I didn't know I heard something, but I didn't know what it was, you know. So I took off running, and I didn't know where he was holding onto my back or pushing me as we was running. And we run about 1/16 of a mile, probably. And the neighbor had a big fence, a rabbit wire over it, and he went over it like a squirrel going up a tree. And I didn't see anything, you know, so I clumb over it, and I asked him when I got on the other side, I said, "What was we running from?" He said, "I don't know what it was." He said, "It was a big old hairy monkey about 8 foot tall." I said, "A what?" I've never heard of no Sasquatches or nothing like that, you know. And he said, "Yes," said, "it was a big old hairy monkey about 8 foot tall." But all I heard on that encounter that time was just like a horse jumped up off the ground. It said, "Bloop, bloop, bloop." And that's all I heard. And he saw it, but, you know, I didn't. And then my next encounter was an actual sighting of probably 10 foot from me. Me and a girlfriend was in a subdivision that they was a building, and it happened the road hadn't been paved or anything, and we was parked out there one night, and we was laying out in some pine trees where the pine straw had fell real thick and all on the ground. We was laying there on the ground, and I wasn't thinking nothing about no Bigfoot or nothing like that. That was entirely not on my mind. So this thing was a hollering up in the woods, and before we went up to where we was at, and she asked me what it was, and I said, "I don't know. I've never heard nothing like that. I heard a lot of strange things because I always lived in the country." So anyway, we was laying there, and it come up beside of us, about 15 foot away from us. I saw it coming up, and it was slunched over, swinging its arms, and its arms went down just about past its knees. Then it turned and walked directly in front of me where our feet was at, stood up, looked straight down at us, and just stared for just a few seconds, turned back around, and walked off into the woods. And when it was about 50 foot away, I looked at her, and I said, "What in the world was that?" She said, "I don't know, let's get out of here." So we left. We got in the car, and we shined the lights all around in the air. We couldn't see no trace of it. whatsoever. And that was my second encounter of it. So on the years going on, you know, and this is coming straight down in a sort of a straight line over the years. And then I moved on the backside of where we originally lived from, further south. And me and my wife was coming home one night, and it was a odd 9-10 o'clock at night. And this big dark shadow run across the road in front of us, and it turned and went off down through in a swampland. So when we got on down the road, about less than a quarter of a mile, and pulled into our house, we heard it sound like a horse going through the woods behind the house. And that was a third encounter that we've had on it. And then I've had some sightings of things that it done about 3 years ago across from my house. Me and my grandson, we go out and pick huckleberries and, you know, just eat them, just walking through the woods and eating them. And we come up on a huckleberry tree about, I guess it was 10, 11 foot tall, and there was about six trees that had the tops broke out of them right there, just right there around that thing, broke out about 6 foot tall, the tops broke out. And, I got to looking around, and I found one footprint in a little muddy swag there, and it had like the one of its toes was broken coming out on the side, and the footprint was probably 15, 16 inches long, you know, it was in about that range. I didn't measure it, but I figured it was, you know, somewhere in that range. And then this year, I done some clearing behind my house, and I got to noticing a big maple. The tree was about the size of a 5-gallon bucket, and it had limbs up in the top of it that was about the size of a big size peach can that they sell peaches in, you know. And the limbs was broke off. So I said, "Well, what that is?" I said, "There's been no wind." So I walked over and I looked at it. And I said, "I don't know what done that." And so I said, "Well, I'll go out this other way and go on this power line right here." So I walked away from where the tree was and started out toward the power line. Well, yeah, I come up on two trees that something had got between, pushed them apart down on the ground, and it had footprints and the handprints on the trees all around it. Ah. And there's one left foot where he put it on one tree and where he held it with the other hand on the other tree while he tried to push that one down. There was four trees pushed down going in different directions, so there was no wind that did that. And those are my encounters with, you know, I think it's following me around. And over the years, you know.
But,
I'm not afraid of it.
No.
I know it exists.
It wasn't aggressive at any time towards you, was it?
Tell people about it. You know, they think you're crazy, you know. But we're not crazy because, like I said, that time that I encountered it when I had a girl there with me, it wasn't no monkey business on my mind about a monkey, you know, or whatever the thing was. And it was a female. It was about, the moon was real bright, and it was like one of the nights where you, it's almost daylight, it's so bright.
Uh-huh.
And it was about 4 foot across the shoulders, had a big old flat nose, had a big mouth, big eyes, and had like a horned owl, the feathers that grows out of horned owls.
Yeah.
Eyebrows that come up, you know, up off of it.
Uh-huh.
And it had a V neckline, and it was gray or white, I don't know, you know, where it was gray or white, because it was, like I said, it was, you know, nighttime, but it was real bright. And I don't know if it was black, red, or brown, but I did, you know, I could distinguish what it looked like, but I couldn't, you know, tell colors other than the white or the gray on its chest there. But I, like I said, I think it was a female.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, when you described this, it was about an 8-foot creature, huh?
Yeah, it was about 8 foot, and it weighed probably 450, somewhere along in there, 500. Yeah. It couldn't have went over that.
I understand. And then, looked like a football player with shoulder pads on, no neck.
Its head was like shoved down in its shoulders, you know, and it was a real husky built, you know. Like you just stuck a football helmet on a big, broad football player, and it just sat right on his neck.
Yeah. And when you described the face, that was kind of interesting as well. Now, was the face hairy?
It had hair on its face. But it wasn't completely hair, you know.
Right. It just had hair on it.
Yeah, it was still hair, you know. You could see,
and it was kind of more human looking.
You could see it. I don't know about that now.
If you look at an ape has got a snout and all that stuff.
Yeah.
If you look at a chimpanzee still has that kind of a snout.
Yeah.
It's a flat face, but it's kind of a snout, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, this one had a flat face, you know, and it didn't look like orangutan. It didn't look like...
What I mean by human, in other words, it wasn't an ape-looking creature. It was more human-looking, but a flat face kind of a thing, right?
Similar to something like that, but it wasn't human.
But it has its own, obviously it has its own...
Yeah. Yeah.
Its own features, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't human. I don't know what it is, but it
no,
wasn't human.
No, I understand. You also described the arms, and that the arms were like past the knees, real long.
They were down past the knees, and it slunched over and swung them as it walked.
Right.
And it walked in a stride-like.
Yeah.
And it didn't take it long when it walked in front of us, and then just... 3 or 4 steps, it was 50, 60 feet away from us. I mean, it was gone.
Yeah, yeah. They grow pretty fast.
Yeah, it didn't run or nothing. It just walked off, you know.
No, it has a very large gait.
Yeah, that's what I say. Stride was you know, a long stride, and, you know. But, like I said, I'm not afraid of it. And I know it exists. And
yeah, it wasn't aggressive at any time when you seen it, right?
No, like I said, the first time that... When me and my cousin seen it, or he seen it, when it jumped up out of that, it was asleep laying there in that grass, and we walked right up on it.
Yeah, I've seen that. We've had reports of that before, where people have walked up on it, and it was sleeping and got within about 10 feet of it, and it just scared the heck out of me. It jumped up.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like a horse to me, but like I said, I've never seen it, but I heard it when it jumped up, and boom.
Sure.
And if it would have wanted to stand, you know, been aggressive, it would have grabbed both of us and beat us in the ground right there.
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't no way, you know, something that big you could have got away from.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's...
One other question is, the most recent one, you said that the trees were just snapped off at the top.
Oh, that was about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, I understand.
Across the road, but my last sighting was one right here behind my house where it pushed the trees over, and it had footprints in the moss and footprints where it stomped the trees down, you know, mashing them down. It must have got mad at me because I went down there and cleared off all of that old undergrowth that was, you know, getting out around my trees, so I must have disturbed his food or something. I don't think he quite liked what I done that time.
That was pretty neat.
But, like I said, I know it exists, and I know it's out there. And like these people that has these shows, goes out in the woods and beats on trees and screams and hollers, you're not going to ever find it like that. You're scared.
Common sense tells you that, right? Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Especially if you got a full movie crew with lights and cameras.
Oh, yeah.
It's like they're going to come out of the woods and, put on a show for you.
Yeah, you're not going to ever find it like that. If you're ever going to find it, this is where you're going to find it. It's a nocturnal creature.
You got it.
It only roams around in that, and that if you're lucky enough to catch it in the daytime, it's like, like boy was kids walked upon it while it was asleep. If you're lucky enough to see it, you'll never encounter it. I wouldn't never think so in the daytime unless it was, desperately starving or something, without having to get out in the daytime to find something to eat or something.
Sure.
But
what we think, Jesse, is this. We know it's nocturnal, usually.
Yeah.
And in the hours, the premium hours that we've been researching here for the past 10 years has been about 10, 9, 10 o'clock at night to about 4 or 5 in the morning. And
the times that I saw it, the two times the shadow that I saw was about 9 or 10 o'clock. And
sure.
Then it was about 9 or 10 o'clock to when it walked up on us that time.
Mm-hmm. But the reason that people see it during the day, we've had a lot of day sightings as well, but the reason they do is we believe that we don't know everything, as you may understand. This is just based on our own conjecture, based on our own experience and information we've gotten from other people and what we've seen. And basically what we think is we think they usually hang around in family pods. In other words, they're not a solitary creature usually. They usually hang around in small family groups, right?
Yeah. I've never, encountered other than just that one that I actually saw and then the shadow. So, I don't know about, if they go in groups. But I know every fall, they travel through certain areas, and that's their feeding grounds or their migration path or something.
You got it.
It started probably within a 5 or 6 mile straight from where I live at. All of the encounters I saw was, about 5 miles away from me, and it's coming this way, all of them. And then this one this year right behind my house, and I know that's what it was because, like I said, and its fur on its feet and hands and all is acidy or something on their hands and feet. It killed every bit of the moss where it put its foot again in the trees and made its perfect hands and footprints on it.
Wow.
And all of the stuff is gone except for one tree that's been laying away from the rain.
Yeah.
We got the footprint on it, and the footprint's about, I'd say, 15, 16 inches long.
That's about right, yeah.
Yeah, and I took a picture of it, and I took pictures of another part where it had its hand on the other side, but it had already deteriorated enough to where it wasn't showing. You could see it visibly with your eyes, but when I took a picture of it.
Yeah, it's hard to see. Well, it's hard to take a picture of some of that stuff because in your eyes can determine that.
Yeah.
But when you try to take a picture of it, it doesn't necessarily come out as clear.
Well, you can see a perfect. I've showed it to other people, and you can see a perfect barefoot left foot where it had the ball of its foot, and then it went up the side of its foot, and then it shows the heel, the side of the bottom of your foot going up your heel. Then it showed the ball of your foot, and then it showed the toes. And then it even poured the toes come out of the ball of your foot,
Mm-hmm.
It even showed a divider there where it put its foot again it and separated, where it put its toe again it, and it had a gap between its toe and the ball of its foot.
Sure.
I mean, it's perfect. It looked like you placed it on the tree there, and it was about 5 foot up in the air because I used to be 5'11", but I've shrunk over the years.
Yeah.
And it's about coming about right up to my neck, and that would have been about 5 foot. I'm about 5'7" now. And
uh-huh.
like I said, I shrunk over the years. And but it was, you know, just about 5 foot off the ground, the foot and the handprints, all of them, except for the ones where they stomped the trees over and stepped on them, mashed them down on the ground. And but, you know, it's out there. All God bless.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what I'd like to do is, one, I'd like to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'd like you to stay. If you don't mind,
well, you know,
we're going to be doing
a... for you to let me come on and tell this, because I have no reason to lie about it.
Oh, no.
I want it found.
Sure.
To prove other people out there that called you crazy, you know, over the years, though. People don't really believe stuff till they actually see it, so...
Well, we got a kind of a special treat tonight. We have a report from the field. We have what we call our SFBI team, our Searching for Bigfoot Incorporated team, is out on expedition right now, and they're going to be doing a report right from the field where they're at, and they're going to be telling us about what's going on in their area. We also have two other guests that do research. They got the same as you. They started looking at things pretty soon they became a part of our Bigfoot family, and now they do full-time research on their own in their areas, and they give us a little report every week.
I think if I had a night vision camera when fall come, I could probably eat him. Because I'm sure that thing's, you know, followed me all over for this many years.
Oh, I believe it. And what I was going to try to tell you before is, when we say that they hang around the family ponds, that doesn't mean you
either,
see them.
Either it lacks me or something. I don't know what it is.
Well, when we say they hang around in family ponds, they hang around in family ponds. However, they don't travel around
where
you're going
to
see them. Normally, they have what they call sentries.
They don't bother me. So.
No, they have what they call like sentries, right?
Yeah.
And they keep an eye on things and go around and... We've had instances where, we've had visual contact with one, and then when we got close to it, to where they thought they were in some sort of danger, they would throw large rocks. I think the rocks would come from the opposite side of where we had a visual on the other creature, and the rocks would not hit us, but they would come very close.
Yeah.
And that was a warning to us to get the heck out of Dodge. Get away from it.
That's what I think this was here behind my house when I cleared off this the brush and all out around the trees here behind my house.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a warning down there, you know, that this is man, stay out of here.
Sure.
And that's what I think that part was, you know. I don't think it would hurt you, you know. But,
normally not. I think the only time they would hurt anybody is like we would do if somebody threatened our family or our, you know, our children or our family or something. Obviously, they protect it. Yeah. But one of the other things that to be aware of is, they make layers, which are they take this branches and of trees and things, and they make bedding areas out of it. They also,
I think around here,
snake man, parasitic.
It also, what they do, Jesse, is they you'll see what they call we call tree twists. Okay, and that you'll see about 6-8 foot up, see branches twisted.
That's why these four or five up here, that, like the tops were just rung down, and, you know, it broke out. Wasn't broke all the way off. It was just pushed the ground and broke.
Yep.
And there was about four or five of them right there. I guess because we was eating his huckleberries, and run
sure.
Warned us to get out of there. Didn't want to mess with them.
Yep.
I
want to thank you for coming on tonight. And also, I'd like to ask you to stay online and listen to the rest of the show. And at the very end of the show, we're going to have about a 10-minute period where everybody can ask questions. You can ask questions, or maybe somebody wants to ask you a question as well. Some of the other guests. Can you do that?
I'm going to have to let you go tonight because
You got to get up early.
No, my mother, yeah, well, I got to get up, but my mother passed away when I talked to you yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, you know, I keep my word. When I tell you I'll do something, I'll do it. So
I'd like to
call you back to that. You know, I'm with a sad heart, but.
Yeah, well, Jesse, I want to tell you something. We send out a big prayer for your mother, and we got a lot of people on here that'll send out some prayers and well wishes to you.
Well,
I'll keep in contact with you. You can keep in contact with me anytime.
Okay. She had a wonderful life. She lived almost 100, so.
Well, that is pretty good. I just lost my parents here not too long ago, too.
Yeah.
And I know what you're going through. It's not an easy thing to lose your parents.
No, it's not. But I want to thank you anyway for let me come on tonight. I've been wanting to tell people this for years, but like I said, people out there shouldn't be afraid of this thing and shouldn't intimidate it. Just go and search for it.
Well, thank you much, Jesse.
All right, and you have a good evening.
You have a good night, and God bless, okay?
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jesse. And we're going to go out here to Richard. Richard, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, I know you were a little bit long with the gentleman before me, so I'm going to be quick. It's been kind of bad here, so I haven't been able to do anything, but I do have something to add.
Sure.
About probably 14 or 15 years ago, before I really got into doing this, I had been playing golf, and it was right in the area where I go now, the golf course.
Yeah.
And it's right next to the town reservoir, which is a very wild-looking place. We went from one green through a little, followed the trail through a little patch of woods to the next tee, and I looked to my right, and we're in a little stand of woods, and there was a tree standing against another tree.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked at that, and I looked at it, and I think I've always had kind of a radar for these things. We get to the next tee, and we hear the tree was pushed down. It was absolute. You heard the tree come crashing down. My friends almost jumped out of their skin. And I ran back there, and I took a 9-iron out of my bag, and I ran into that patch. I knew what it was. And that was within a mile of a Class B sighting on the BFRO website.
Mm-hmm.
And it was within 2 miles of another sighting, and it was within a mile and a half where I saw my first footprint, probably 5 years before that.
Wow, pretty good.
Yeah, well, you know, I know what it was. Because, Bill, you got to understand, this where I live, there's stands of woods all over the place here.
Mm-hmm.
And like we've talked before, like, there's more deer in New York State than when the Pilgrims came to the United States. These things hang around the perimeter of where people live. I'm
mm-hmm.
almost positive a lot of them do. Not all of them, but a lot of them do.
Sure.
And they're entwined in people's lives, and people don't even know it.
Well, of course.
I think if people really knew what was going around them, they'd freak out.
I understand, yeah. It's true. There's thousands of them out there, let me tell you, and I get reports every single day.
There's got to be thousands to be breeding population of them.
Yeah. Well, like I said, there's only one state I haven't got a report from. That's Hawaii.
And they're masters of being staying hidden. And they're around us, and people just don't know it. They would freak out.
Mm-hmm.
Where I go, women hike through there all by themselves all the time. If they knew what was in there, they'd never go in there. Never, ever. And that my footprint I got from the mile and a half from there was in 3 inches of water. was about 18 inches long, wide, and it was five toes. It was the most perfect footprint you could ever imagine. But I didn't know anything about casting, and it was just a fluke I saw it because I had to do something that was just out of the way. It had been watching, the people there,
mm-hmm.
and it went across this, they call it a creek, but it's probably about 75 to 100 feet across it,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of dead deadfall in the creek. The name of it is Norman's Kill Creek. If you go across that creek, it looks like something out of Jurassic Park. Out of something, it's sheer woods, probably for about 5 miles or 6 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, that's a pretty hefty area there.
Oh, yeah. And back in the 50s, I saw something on the Internet. Somebody had put on, it had to be the late 70s. They wondered if there was Bigfoot in the pine bush because they heard strange calls at night. They lived in Colony, which is adjacent to the preserve.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is something that's been around for a while, and the one report I told you about was actually in the local Times Union newspaper that a guy had seen one when he went to the store. He looked up and there it was. He was eating a candy bar. He almost passed out.
Well, we've had some sightings that have been pretty much down in populated areas here, too.
Well, you had the one where they saw it right outside the Indian casino.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's not only there, but there's been a couple other places. One actually in Arizona where they was walking right down the street at about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And the guy thought it was a drunk, a great big gigantic drunk, until he got real close to it and stunk and looked at it, and it looked like it was a big old hairy guy.
The closest I've come to smelling something out there, I smelled something that smelled like the monkey cages at the Utica Zoo from when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was that gamey, wet smell.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't what I read, where it smells almost like garbage or defecation. I've never smelled that.
Well, a lot of people compare it to rotten eggs, a wet dog, rotten egg kind of
this
a...
This was almost like a wet dog smell.
Right.
And it's before I had ever seen anything out there except footprints. I had been seeing footprints for quite a while, but I had
mm-hmm.
never seen anything until I had the one sighting when it went across the path. That's when I called you guys the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And where I saw run across the path, the trail, is where I heard the two vocalizing that one day. And funny thing about Bill... And just about the same area, I saw a whole tree full of vultures sitting in a tree. And I'm wondering if maybe there was a kill back there someplace and they were just waiting.
It could
be. You know? Because I doubt if these things made a kill and ate it right off the trail. I would see deer tracks all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
I'll tell you what, let's go on to Anthony. Tom is going to dial in here in about another 5 minutes. We'll go on to Anthony and get his, and once we'll get Tom on and find out what they're doing, and at the end of the show here, we'll open it up for everybody, and we'll do a little discussion thing.
I want to just wish that gentleman my sympathy for his mother.
Rocky.
Hey, Rocky.
Hey.
We'll be right with you, good buddy.
Okay.
Another 5 minutes. Okay, we're going to go to Anthony right now. And, Richard, we'll talk to you at the end of the...
Tom.
At the end of the show, okay? Anthony, how are you, my friend?
Doing all right. I hope everybody's here doing good.
Tell us what's going on.
Well,
we got about 5 minutes.
Okay. We've been in the area. We've had an interesting weekend, actually. We've been out a few times. And with the last activity happening on Monday. So we've gone out to a new area, kind of like we were out there with Parabolic Mike. We were hearing a lot of sounds, a lot of walking. Unfortunately, no people, with the exception, of a pair of red eyes in the distance. But we heard a lot of walking, and kind of right when we had wrapped it up, we had heard a sound, and we couldn't identify what it was. It didn't sound like it was a creature. It sounded like something had fallen or whatever, like maybe something had, it sounded like just something falling nearby the house or something, that's what it kind of sounded like. And went out to investigate. We turned on the spotlight, and then we didn't see anything, like I said, but all of a sudden you hear that, that shout. I mean, that scream was so loud, man, it rattled the bones. We didn't realize they were right there the whole time. It was just like that, woo! I was like, whoa. We were like thrown back and kind of, maybe just stopping our tracks, like they're not going a step further. just one of those moments that you just wish you had a thermal camera, because then you would have had some, evidence to show that, hey, they were there, we've had a lot of, we had set out game cameras several weeks earlier, and when we were reviewing the cameras, we noticed that, they were tripping the camera, but it seems like, it also records audio, so it seems like they were either hitting it with a stick or maybe throwing a rock at it or something. It seemed like, they were intentionally throwing, they were intentionally setting it off, but I think they were like either having fun with it or whatever, because it was, for several nights in a row, it was, it was tripped, and then a few minutes later it was tripped again. We recorded a video, and you could just hear the clacking sound, and that. At first, I thought it was a tree knock, and then as I was playing it back with the headphones, and I was hearing it a lot more clearly that, it was either something was being thrown at the game camera, or they were just maybe, tapping it with a stick or something,
So. Stuart's on the call.
Be right with you, Stuart.
Thank you, sir.
So then that's what's going on in your area, huh?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we did have footprints, no plaster of Paris with me.
Oh, yeah, really?
Footprints. I took pictures, but then, I didn't, the sun was going down when I had taken pictures, and so didn't realize that when I got back, cell phone, kind of showed it blurry. So, hoping to go back there and, so now we just identified another spot where they're at. So hopefully we'll be able to go back there one day and cast some prints. But that was our fun for the weekend.
Well, our friend, he didn't get on tonight, but his name is Dustin. Dustin last night had an encounter, and it was within about 10 feet. And, he actually saw the face, the eyes, kind of an reddish-orange eyes. He described the facial features really good. Pretty neat.
Was it human-looking to him, or?
Yeah, it was more human-looking than it was ape-looking, yeah. And but I'll have to have him on next week. I'll tell you what, we got Tom and his team. Ready to go. They're reporting from the field here. Let's go to them, and then we can finish up at the end of the show. How's that?
Sounds good.
Okay, thanks, sounds Anthony. Good. Well, we'll see you at the end of the show, okay?
All righty.
Ladies and gentlemen, Anthony from Virginia, Well, now we're going to go out here to Tom, and Taylor, Richard. Tom, we lost Rocky.
Yeah, it's okay. They're all going to talk on one phone with mine.
So okay.
This way, it's because they were on speakers, and it was kind of...
Well, welcome.
Yeah, listen, it's good to be... Actually, it's good to be anywhere right now. We've had some excitement today already, and I got to tell you straight up, you know, I'm here with the men that I love and guys that got my back. I'm here with, of course, Chico. I'm here with the Swede, a.k.a. Robert, and, of course, Rocky, my brother, and Flint Fernando. And it's been a treat today. We're in the field all day, and we're going to be in there all night tonight. I can just tell you this, folks, that we're on 800 acres of land. We've got the blessings of the land owner. These people have been so good to us. You have no idea. But the local people in the restaurants, the barbecue place, Skip Henry, is Skip's wife, the owner, the people there that run the place have been so wonderful to us. You have no idea. They wouldn't allow us to pay for any food because of the work that we do, and our blessings go out to them like you wouldn't believe. So if you're ever in the area, which we'll discuss later on and we'll show you the picture of the place, just can't divulge it right now, we want you to patronize them because they sure as hell did us proud. I'm going to tell you, we were out today. We baited three different areas. We cameraed three different areas. Our good buddy Chico took one for the team, ran into a boar, had some pretty big tusks, cut open his arm, and went almost down, all the way down to his bone. But thank God we had the Swede and Rocky here, because the Swede, you know, is an amateur, actually does it for his real job, an upholsterer. And he had one of those semicircle needles, and Rocky had some fishing twine, and believe it or not, they stitched him up. And Chico's good as new. Now he's got more stories to tell the world. And he's just happy as hell. And we were in some terrain today that is compelling as hell. And we have, I don't know if Stuart is on yet. Stuart, are you on with us?
Yes, sir. I'm on.
Okay. This is the gentleman that got us out to this area. When I can tell you where, ladies and gentlemen, I can just tell you his name is Stuart. Why don't you briefly tell everybody the story that you told us and how we got out here because of you?
Well, this whole waterway system, I was fishing 10 years ago with my son and had a large object after midnight. I'd heard something in the brush. Heard it there, spotted and thought I saw something, didn't want to spook my son, so I went back to fishing, and a large object came hitting the water less than 10 feet from us within a few minutes and scared the daylights out of both of us. I felt threatened, ran to my truck, got a pistol, and at that point in time thought somebody was just messing with us. And I warned him. I said, look, I've got a gun. You throw something that big at us again, I may, you know, return fire. Well, I lied a little bit. I wound up jacking back at that point and cracked around into the mud, and it sounded like a small bulldozer taking off through the brush away from us. And that was my kind of first what in the world was that moment. And over a period of time, finding threads and getting on BFRO, I realized that this could very well have been a close encounter. I studied this waterway system carefully and looked at areas that would have food, cover, and concealment, and actually had one of my first visual sightings out there through binoculars at 150 yards, and later was able to obtain several photographs of these subjects out there. So it's been a good area for me. I haven't had time to go out there over the last year or two, but it appears to still be promising with activity.
Well, why don't you do this? Why don't you tell people what you retired at?
Pardon me?
Tell them the job you used to do. What did you retire at?
Well, it was a specialized area of investigative law enforcement dealing with forensic documentation regarding fire and explosions. And, you know, it kind of dovetailed in with my interest here. And I, for much of the early time, as a lot of people are dealing with this phenomenon, is the jokers, game players, and people that don't really take this seriously can be a distraction or, you know, a disappointment. But through it all, I wanted to be analytical and factual and experience things for myself, and I was very fortunate enough to experience stuff out in the field. I think for anybody that is interested, depending on you know, a third party to get verification can be sometimes frustrating. But find the right people and get out there and experience it for yourself.
By the way, what do you think of Tom Biscotti and searching for Bigfoot and his team?
Hey, I have had so much fun the last couple of days hanging out with a great group of people. I've laughed hard. Had a great time, Tom. Great time. And appreciate the, you know, including me in on everything. The only thing is, y'all work too hard.
Yeah.
It's very regimented and organized. Just a little too much work, you know. But I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. When it comes to the professionalism about getting gainful permits to get on the property and getting the certificates that needed done from the local directors of highways and byways and different city ordinances, how did you do it?
I think you were top shelf. It completely impressed me, and I can tell you're a man that wants to do things the right way. You don't like cutting corners or shortchanging. I've been very impressed and learned a lot watching your team work. I've got nothing but good to say. Y'all are really dedicated, very knowledgeable, and want to go out there and do the right thing.
You know, Stuart, coming from you, a fellow researcher and a man of your trade that you retired from, is a wonderful compliment. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I thank you for my team members. And you know what? We're hoping that the next few days are going to be very fruitful and prove to the world that, hey, many of these creatures are here. And at that point in time, we will divulge the area. But, you know, while we've got about 5 minutes left, I'm going to pass the phone around to some of the other team members. This is, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is Robert, a.k.a. Sweet's birthday today. So we're going to let Sweet get on the phone first. Sweet, go ahead. Say hello to everybody.
Hey, Marco.
Happy birthday, Sweet.
Hey, I appreciate it. It's nice to have it, too. Hopefully I'll see another bunch.
Have a pork sandwich on me, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a good time today. A lot of activity going on. It's great. Looking forward to tonight's little outing here after a little bit. We're going to get a little rest and hit it hard tonight.
Okay, fantastic, Sweet. Thank you so much. I'm going to pass the phone over to my brother from another mother, Mr. Rocky.
Hey, Marco. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Rocky.
We've had a good time today. We went out with Sweet and celebrated his birthday. I got a birthday present. He didn't. We've had a good time. We've got Chico here, and, you know, as long as Chico's here, we're safe from something. We've got Fernando here. He's trying to get me to pass it back to Chico, but What can you say about Chico? He's our, we can't do without him. We've tried. Well,
Rocky, you know, one thing that happened here, Rocky, one thing that happened here is we were just talking about this field medicine stuff with you and Swede about a week ago, and I guess you got a chance to practice, huh?
Well, you know, we voted on it. We wasn't sure if we wanted to save him or not, but, you know, he's too tough to eat no matter how long you cook him. So we went ahead and picked him up, and he seems to be okay now. But Fernando, well, I just have to tell you, if we run out of food, we still got our eye on him. Yeah, I'm going to pass the phone on to our famous comic relief, Mr. Chico. Here we go. Hey, hello, everybody out there.
Hi, Chico. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I tell you what, these guys are something. They're phenomenal. You know, they might joke about a lot of things, but let me tell you something. When that boar got a hold of me, I didn't know what I was going to say.
Should have gone blind.
But then, you know what? Nobody can take a shot at him because I was too damn close to him. But anyhow, Rocky, he makes jokes a lot. But let me tell you something. Him and Swede, they were hospital corners out there in the field. And it took me 15 miles to get to the pharmacy after that to make sure that I wasn't going to die 20 minutes later. But I'm doing all right. Ain't nothing wrong. And I'm glad to be on this radio with you guys tonight. And I'm glad to be out in the field with the rest of the big hunters. Thank you, Chico. It means a lot to us. And as you know, ladies and gentlemen, everybody needs comic relief now and then. You know, our new member, his name is Fernando. Great guy. I'm going to pass the phone over to him. He's the first, actually, this is the second time he's been on expedition with us. I'm going to ask him if he'll tell you guys out there in radio land exactly what he experienced and what he learned from us. Fernando, hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody. Well, it's been a great experience. This is the second time I've come out, and I've learned a lot, and I'm still learning. So I'm looking forward for something to happen so that I can be part of it and help team out.
Very few words, ladies and gentlemen, but those few words mean an awful lot, believe me. And I'll tell you what, he didn't know anything about Bigfoot hunting, but he got his feet wet today. And I'll tell you, we were all over like 800 acres, ladies and gentlemen, 800 acres. Okay, a lot of boar out in this area, a lot of boar, and with creatures sighted, as Stuart told you earlier, and we got the full rain of it. And you know, the boys are out there, boots on the ground all night long. I'll tell you what, if things happen to go on and we get lucky, you'll be the first to know. Fernando, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Chico, get on the mend. I know you will be. Swede, happy birthday. My brother Rocky, God bless you for being here with us. You have no idea what it means to me. Marco, Bill, I love you, man. You're the best. And Stuart, thank you.
You're most welcome.
For sharing with us and your lovely bride. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. And tomorrow, hopefully, we can give you a full report of what we found tonight.
Excellent.
Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America.
Hey, everybody. That was Tom Biscardi and his SFBI team reporting from the field. And it looks like they're settled in and ready to go. I'd like to go now into our little discussion period. Snake Man, I'm putting you on, buddy. Everybody
okay.
There?
Yeah, I'm ready. Marco, I want to tell you something. Lately, any show I've listened to, I've had to turn it off because it was so goddamn boring. There's nothing like what we just heard 2 minutes ago on this show. But somebody like Tom actually out in the field at this moment doing something. Everybody else that has a show, they put you to sleep. They put you to sleep. I can't explain it.
It's been a while since we've had a report from the field, because we've been pretty much tied up with a lot of other things. But that'll become more frequent like we used to do. We used to at least once every other month, or once a month or a couple times a month, do specials. And basically everybody would be on this.
Well, there's only one Tom Biscardi, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one Tom Biscardi. He makes stuff happen. These other people, they're like barstool bikers. They talk about going on expeditions and looking. They don't. Believe me.
The other thing is you got to understand that the other differences are many of the other expeditions really, well, I don't consider them expeditions. There are some, believe me. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want to ruffle feathers or anything like that. But there's quite a few people out there that they call them expeditions, and it's called roadside hunting. And you just can't do that. I mean, it just doesn't work. Primarily, when Tom gets together with his team, the team goes out. They have supplies and things. They carry their supplies to stations and different areas and pre-set them up. And as you've probably heard Rocky and Swede talk about many times, they cold camp. So there's, in other words, they don't build fires, when they're out hunting or out in the, going through the night. It's a cold camp. And so there's quite a bit of difference in how they approach, this research. And we have a lot of good luck, too.
Lots of luck. The team that's out there tonight with Tom, that's first rate. That is a first rate team.
Hey, but Marco?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Rich.
Yeah, it's okay.
I want to know, what was Chico doing to the boar to get attacked?
Well, he wasn't doing anything. basically, what happened was there was a boar there, and it attacked him. I'm not sure you're familiar with wild boar, but they pretty much they're mean.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them, but a lot of times they won't attack.
I've seen it. All you got to be is anywhere near where they're at, and if they detect you and you're near them, where they're feeding and whatever, it's like you've seen a bull, right?
Yeah,
a bull doesn't have to have anything to charge you.
Right. Well,
they're just ornery. Well, the same thing with a lot of these, these hogs. They do the same thing. These boars, man. I do
critters for a living, A lot of times the philosophy of don't mess with them, they won't mess with you, sometimes does apply, but I don't know, could that have been mating season? Could they have been fighting?
I don't know. I can tell you one thing. I'd never come anywhere near where there was a group of boars fooling around without having a good tree to be next to me where I could crawl up it.
Right. Well, too, Marco, you know what I do for a living.
No, I know.
Okay, and Rich, you do too, but, I mean, that's just where it's different. Just because I do it, other people shouldn't try to do it, I mean, out in the woods, you got to have a little caution.
Well, let me tell you something. If you've ever tried to kill a boar, you probably find out that they're not easy to kill.
I know that.
It's a very, very, very difficult thing is to hit them exactly right in the right spot,
exactly.
To knock them down.
Exactly. But like you were saying about the Bigfoot stuff, about people doing the roadside hunting and stuff like that. It's very easy to be hunting from your computer and saying you know everything compared to being actually out in the field and going out in the field and learning and doing the stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm not trying to put people down. I mean, there's people, a lot of people are limited in what they can do, and that's fine. But, I mean, if you're limited to that's all you can do is on your computer and you're interested in finding out information about it, then that's the way you do it. But it's not what I'm trying to say is actual evidence and other things like that. You just can't take other people's stuff and claim it to be fraudulent or anything if you weren't there when you got it, if you weren't present when it was taken. You have no idea what... Mm-hmm. You know, what's happened and what, you know, what people have gone through to get it. You know, a lot of people, just a plain footprint, okay, they think, these footprints are all fake. They're not. They have dermal ridges, and the dermal ridges are like your fingerprints,
exactly.
You know, or a palm print. And that's not a, you know, that's not a fake thing. That's real stuff. And if you got an 18-inch foot...
Yeah,
that's not a normal size foot.
Exactly.
When I was going out in the beginning, I used to see footprints, but they would only be about 4 or 5 inches long with toes.
Sure, well that's different.
And I didn't pay as much attention as I should have. Stupid me! I'm thinking every Bigfoot footprint's got to be 18 inches long.
No.
They got babies and there's little ones.
Sure. What we've done besides the baby, besides the small ones, we've pretty much about usually around 15, anywhere from 15 to 20. 23 inches is the largest footprint that we have.
I had one that was close to that, Marco.
Mm-hmm.
I had one that was over 20 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually part of a track line, but the area I go to, they're not castable.
I understand, and I understand that. That's the other factor is the ground and the rocky and clay and other stuff.
Right.
But the issue, a lot of issues that people overlook are simple things like, you know, you'll see a guy's footprint next to a footprint. And you'll see that the human footprint barely is visible because it just doesn't go down in the ground very far. And you'll notice that big footprint goes about a half inch or more into the ground. So that means there's quite a bit of weight behind that.
Well, so where I go to leave an impression, there would be impressions.
Mm-hmm.
I weighed 260 pounds back then, and I didn't leave a mark. And yet there's impressions.
Many times I bring up the fact that you prepare an area, and to prepare an area you use bait, and you take the ground around where the bait is hanging, and you prepare the ground so that it will make a footprint. Okay, and that can be sand, that can be, if it's a hard surface like a porch or something, flower works. Many different, there are many different ways of doing that. If the ground is pliable enough, you use one of those little, you know, garden tools.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Not the big rig, but a small one. And you ruffle up the ground and all around it. And get it, fluffed up so that when something steps in it, you have a footprint. There's many different things to set an area up. Anthony is aware of that. I mean, Anthony can tell us, right, Anthony? Anthony? Hello, Anthony?
I just got one.
Hey, Anthony.
Hey, I'm sorry. This was accidentally muted. I apologize for that.
No, that's all right. No, you've seen Tom and the team set up an area.
Yep.
And yes, you prepare it, and you know it's more than just, you know, you have to set it up. You know, there's certain things you got to do. Depending upon the surface and everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way they prepared the ground, you know, setting out the bait. I don't know if Rex is part of the expedition this time, you know, but he was setting up all the video and recording equipment, you know.
Sure.
I think he did a great job with that. It was quite a bit I learned my first night out with Tom, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that we, you know, that are done. And it's not all the same, I mean, because you have to take in consideration the environment you're in. If there's lots of leaf litter around, it may not even be plausible to get a footprint because of the, you know, the pine needles and other stuff is so thick that it doesn't even make, you know, it's like sponge. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
And so there's many different factors. But, you know, normally if you take a look around and you look at it and you apply some sort of a measure to try to get more information, you can do that. And there's different ways of doing it, and that's what we do. We learn new things all the time, too. But it's a pretty interesting thing. What's really interesting is when it works.
Exactly.
That's
right.
Well, that night we went out, I mean, you know, there were several prints, and you know, Tom made a cast. He let me keep one of them.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, when we were, when Tom and them came out here to Paris over by Lamar Point, and my first interview with you and all that. Remember that,
sure.
Marco?
Yeah.
Okay. You remember me talking to you about having to prepare the area, how I would go and check it and all that stuff. What a lot of people don't tell you about is that, you know, my company, we checked everything ahead of time before everybody, but we always had some team members with us to make sure and witness that nobody faked anything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's for our integrity as well as theirs.
Sure.
And, you know, when we were out there, I believe I was talking with Hawk. I don't know if you remember him or not.
Yeah, I remember.
I had that encounter with the juvenile squatch out here in Lamar Point.
Yep.
And I remembered that and everything. But you know what was funny? There was only little handprints, or what looked like handprints or knuckle prints that were out there, but no footprints of that baby.
Yeah, well, and it's probably not unusual. I mean, that happens. I mean, you only can get what you got, you know what I mean?
I told you about, I think it was last summer, how we had three boatloads of people out there at Pat Mays Lake that witnessed something in the water, come out of the water and run up on shore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now they closed off that park for a while.
Huh. It's amazing.
That tells you the government's at work, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they could be. I mean, you know, we don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell. You know, it's a difficult thing to try to ascertain whether, you know, how they're involved or anything like that without knowing. I mean, we have no resources to find out. You know, all we can see is, you know, certain things. I mean, the government is involved can be a very large thing or a very minimal thing. You know, if it's a game warden or somebody else out there and they're doing something, I mean, you know, it all depends. Is it county? Is it state? Is it federal? There's so many questions that you got to find out. And then who has authority over the park services or the lines and all that other stuff? And
what I found interesting, Marco, is that, you know, the government's not going to tell you, well, no, I'm not going to, no, we're not keeping a secret from you. Or, yes, we are keeping a secret from you.
Well, they're not going to say anything to anybody. And why would they? I mean, you know, they don't have to. They're not required to.
Exactly.
But, I mean, it's, you know, we just have to be more aware of what is going on and try to, just try to keep things in perspective.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
I talked to my mother back in Florida, and she told me that the Navy has had planes flying over the swamplands behind our house where I had that first sighting, and they actually see these things in clusters walking through the swamps.
Huh.
They have seen these things in small cluster groups. I don't know if they're called pods or
well, family pods, yeah, family pods is what we call them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Family units, pods, whatever you want to call them.
Right, but they've seen them. They're in the marshes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if it's the at the time of the migration or what it is, but it's fascinating that they actually have seen them. The Navy has actually seen them.
Yeah, and they make a report, all that good stuff, and the report goes up, and they say, oh, that's a bunch of nonsense. And they file it.
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't people react the same as they do? It's not that the government is hiding things. It's just that the government is ignorant of certain things as well, just like people are. I mean, when you go out and tell somebody you saw a Bigfoot, what are they going to tell you?
Yeah,
you're crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the same thing. I mean, it's the same thing with any organization. It'll go to a certain level, and they'll say, well, this is a bunch of garbage or whatever, and they'll say, well, just file it, and, you know, they don't want to waste any money on a report, right?
Right. We have a lot of people here that are wanting to know when Tom's coming back.
Don't know.
We got a lot of people that are new fans that are. I've been turning to the Bigfoot live radio show. They've been listening to it, and they want to know when Tom's coming back out. They want to meet the Bigfoot owner.
Well, we don't know what. See, here's the thing we have to do. First of all, we can't tell you where we're at. There's a reason for that. I mean, there's too many people out there. I mean, you guys have no idea how many calls I get from producers, from the producer from Finding Bigfoot to several other producers on television shows, and they call us and they ask permission and they want to get information from us and they want contact information from us for certain people. Well, we have promised all of our people we will never give out any information whatsoever on any one individual. What we'll do is we'll give you the contact information, and if you want to contact them, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. And that's how we've operated now for quite a long time.
Yeah.
And what happens is, if we were to tell people where we're at, and you know where we're what we're doing and all that stuff, we'd have all kinds. I mean, this happened to us several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That we told everybody, hey, we're on our way to Paris, Texas. We have made a big announcement on it, Paris, Texas. Well, guess what happened? About 8 hours before we got there, there's this little old truck out there, and they were running around, and they were making these footprints in the sand.
Yeah, that's who we chased off, right?
Yeah, and what they were doing is staking it. And we don't even know, we didn't know, we found the people, we seen them. We didn't know the organization, but they were just trying to do that to hoax everything up. And we don't need that. I mean, we're out there with serious business, and we're actually trying to, you know, get somewhere. We're not trying to pull anything on anybody. We're actually reporting what we see when we see it. You know,
I understand. We can't even go out to eat, me and Rosebud, without someone hassling us about, oh, you're the Snake Man. You're with the Bigfoot crew.
Right, and that happened. So what we decided to do is we decided when we do go out on an expedition, first of all, we don't tell you where we're going right away.
Yeah.
Once we get in there and we're there for a while, we'll divulge it. Once we've gotten what we need, we'll do special reports from it so that we can give people information. And then when it's all over, that's when I'll publish, you know, on the web page, the pictures and all the other little things that, you know, and all the other stuff that happened and the stories from the people and things like that. And that's the way we have to run it.
Oh, I understand. I really do. I understand completely. But I'm just wondering, because these people have asked me, when are they coming out and all this stuff. They want to be there. They want to go on a Bigfoot hunt. They really believe in it. They've had encounters, blah, blah, blah.
Well, what happens is whenever Tom gets somewhere near an area where he's aware that there's a lot of activity, he'll call people. And he'll notify them and ahead of time. And, you know, I mean, it's not like he shows up on your doorstep and say, let's go find a Bigfoot. I mean,
okay, that happened to me once. Tom did that to me once.
No, what I'm saying is that normally he contacts people ahead of time before we go there.
I know.
And there's a reason for that, too. You just can't go tramping around on somebody's property. You have to have permission.
Right.
And if it's state property or federal property, you got to get special permission. So that means you got to go in and get a special, you know, dispensation to allow you to go on to the property with firearms or just plain go on and do research, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
That's very true. I agree with you, Marco. Oh, and Marco Rosebud told me to tell you hello.
Oh, say hi to Rosebud, too.
Hey, Marco?
Yeah, Richard.
I wonder who was patching up the boar after Chico got done with it. I met Chico.
Well, I think they ate the boar.
Did they?
Yes, they did. They had some roast pig the other night. So,
Chico's
as you know, Rocky and Sweet are experts at that.
Oh, yeah. Chico's a pretty tough fella.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And those other two.
Yeah, ex-Navy SEAL,
you know,
I mean.
Yeah, and those other two guys.
Rocky and Sweet.
They
know
I'm
how
sure
to.
The boar came out second.
Chico explained he couldn't, they couldn't shoot it because it was too close to him.
Right.
So they had to wait till they got him off him and got him out of there, and then they took care of it. And
they gave it a little Arkansas sting, I'm sure.
And then they had a little bit of some pork, roast pork.
Oh, yeah, sure they did.
Yeah, wasn't that what they were eating, was pork sandwiches or something?
Yeah, right.
That's what happened to the boar.
Hey, them guys, if they would eat beaver, they'll sure eat boar.
Well, what I wanted to let you guys know is, make everybody aware of, is that just a couple of weeks ago, Rocky and Swede were talking about different medical things that you bring with you, and how they, what they do, and what kind of circumstances can happen. And you know, of course, Rocky always jokes around. He pulled Swede's tooth out, right, with the pliers. And Swede, when Rocky got something wrong with his foot, the Swede was going to go and fix his foot for him. But, In real time, what happened was they really did have an emergency, and someone got hurt with a boar, and it was probably pretty darn bad. When I was on the phone with him, it was all the way down to the bone. And what they ended up doing was their little field kit that they carry with them. He had all the right stuff there, and they took care of it, and just like a hospital corpsman in the field.
Well, those hogs are built for rooting. That's what they're built for. That's what those tusks are good for.
Well, those tusks are razor sharp, too.
Yeah, they are. Especially those Arkansas Razorbacks.
Well, now they're all over the place. I mean,
now it's a new species of, Russian hogs?
I have no. All I can tell you is this: I know that in Arkansas and a few other states, there, and in Texas especially as well, and some other states, they're just. I mean, they can dig up 100 acres of nothing flat, and they're not small anymore. They're pretty good size.
Yeah, that's the Russian hogs, Marco. We've been getting a lot of calls on those here too.
Mm-hmm.
They're cost costing over $1 million worth of damage.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that, and that's why they got, you know, it's kind of open hog season for getting rid of hogs because they can't get rid of them fast enough.
Yeah, certain states, though, Marco, there's no limit.
You know, I understand. As I said, they can't get rid of them fast enough.
Yeah.
They're they multiply like worse than rabbits.
But rabbits won't chew your arm off.
No. No, but you've seen what happened in Australia, right?
What was that?
Well, you have about 2,000 miles of rabbit-proof fence that's actually separated half of Australia from the other half of Australia because of the rabbits.
Oh, wow.
And they also had an infliction of mice. But the rabbits were a big thing for a long time. They actually had to build fences to keep them from going into other parts of the country.
Right.
So.
Right.
But I don't know how you can build a fence for a pig.
Well, with barbs, and you got to dig them into the ground.
I don't know. They're pretty.
A lot of times when we had to build fences, it was with sharp shell rock to go around the barrier where they can't root through it,
mm-hmm.
or cactus.
I probably do. But it's a pretty difficult situation for everyone.
Right.
Well, hey, everybody, I want to tell you, I want to thank Richard, Anthony, Snake Man, thanks for coming on. You guys take care. Appreciate all your time. And we'll see everybody next week. Keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See everybody next week. Tonight.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, mystery, legend, tales, and facts.